This week on Barbell Shrug, we're going to talk about setting priorities for leading up to the CrossFit Games and peaking for the competition.
Yo, this is CTP, and you're listening to the Barbell Shrug podcast, the number one strength and conditioning podcast for CrossFitters.
If you want to check out the video version, which you should, go to fitter.tv and watch that because it's way cooler than just listening.
And how do you spell fitter.tv there, Mr. Bledsoe?
F-I-T-R.tv.
He's a good speller. All right, while you're there, definitely go and sign up for the newsletter. As part of signing up for the newsletter, you'll get a video that Mike made where he shows you the top seven snatch mistakes that you're probably making that are keeping you from hitting that next PR and lifting some big weight.
Yeah, look at the seminars, tune into the show, and get ready to become a more awesomer version of
you. We give you the tools you need to succeed.
You become a tool.
Welcome to Barbell Shrug. I'm Mike Bledsoe, here with Doug Larson, Chris Moore, and our guest, kind of, recurring guest, Mike McGoldrick. Stay tuned at least to the middle of this show because Mike will be doing a rope climb technique wad. Is it good?
Yeah, it's good.
It's pretty good.
Okay. Everything I've ever learned about rope climb, I learned from Mike.
Watching this one show.
He's our best monkey in the gym for sure.
If you're a fat gym kid, you need to stay tuned.
Word of the day is precast, so ears open for that. Precrastination is the word of the day.
So if you
we're going to be doing nothing soon.
If you precrastinate,
you're planning on doing nothing before you need to do something.
Exactly. Make sure to check us out on iTunes if you haven't done that yet. So if you're watching on YouTube, go to iTunes, check us out there, listen while you drive your car. Don't watch the videos while you drive your car.
And don't text about them.
Some people have been doing that. They've been taking pictures of their speedometer with their phone, like right next to it.
D-Rob.
Don't do anything dangerous.
And don't forget also, we're going to be at the Garage Games in a few days. So yeah, this posts on Wednesday, and we'll be there like 2 days later. Mm-hmm. We're going to be podcasting. All of us will be there. Mike will be there with his mobility kits. You're going to have your own booth. You'll be selling some mobility kits. You're going to give a discount. Is that right?
That's right.
You have a booth?
I have a booth.
Awesome.
A 10x10. Awesome. All to myself. Booth. I'm going to have a moat with alligators and everything.
Do you get booth girls?
Yeah.
You got one.
That's a good idea.
He's like, oh, I should have thought about that.
Crap.
You have an attractive girlfriend. I think you'd ask her kindly to serve that role.
There you go.
She's not coming, right?
No, she's not.
Oh.
So all you available ladies out there.
Big weekend in Atlanta.
Another crushed idea.
Convince her to take a picture in a bikini and let you print it off. This is my girlfriend, I swear.
Yeah. You make a life-size cardboard cutout for holding a mobility kit.
She's mobile. Yeah. Get as mobile as her.
We're going to be hanging out. Chris, Doug, and I are all going to be speaking there as well. We'll have our own booth. We're going to be podcasting on site. Doug is talking about?
Talking about recovery.
Recovery. Yep. Chris is talking about?
Progression kind of thing.
Still thinking about it.
the progressive movement?
No. You won't know.
Chris is going to remain as vague as possible.
In for a surprise.
Well, it's still coming. It's how to go from point A to point B, but a different take on it.
Cool.
Yeah. Radically. No one's ever thought
my thoughts.
I don't
know what that means, but all right, I'll take it.
Like when it's over, are people going to come out the door just crying?
Oh, my God. I can't even look at the sky the same way anymore.
All right.
I'll be talking about running a gym business, and whether you're in the business of running a CrossFit box or want to be in the business of running a CrossFit box, or whether you just run a business that has nothing to do with CrossFit, hopefully I'll be able to offer up some nuggets and pearls that will help you have fulfillment and success and all that.
Don't stink your
box. Maybe even make more money.
Michael Bledsoe.
We'll talk about making money, but it's more about what happens inside
your box.
For sure. Inside your box. Yeah. No doubt.
It's more about what happens inside your box.
The title of my talk is Don't Open a Box.
it's the worst title in a good way.
We weren't sober when we came up with that one. That's okay.
Don't open a box.
Today we're going to talk about...
I like how we got drug into that one. We weren't sober.
It was you.
I was being pressured, and it was the Super Bowl.
You were drunk in my living room floor, I think, at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, probably. Again, I'm not an alcoholic. Mike, you finished... you just did the OC Throwdown a few
weeks ago.
Yep. Yeah. Finished fifth place.
That's right.
How'd that go? What do you think about the competition?
Well, he's finished fifth.
I mean, like, well, how the sometimes competitions, you know, you don't feel we're weighted balanced in a balanced way and stuff like that. What did you think about SC Throwdown?
Yeah, I thought the events were great. It really surprised me, to be honest, because looking at the events when they first started announcing them, I was like, I don't even want to do this anymore.
Well, I remember you.
According to my old strengths.
I remember you when they made the announcement. You were like, "This is challenging."
This is exactly what I need. Yeah. Like the first event was like a 7K run with a sandbag for a third of it.
And Mike's not a runner.
It's a lot of K's.
And then,
what'd you finish in that event? You did pretty good, right?
20th, yeah. I think, or 18th, or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean,
how many people competed that weekend?
Well, you had to pre-qualify to get there. And then I think
there's like 700 something people.
Well,
that tried to pre-qualify.
Yeah. The online qualifier was pretty large, and then they took like the top 60 basically. Plus, they had like special invites, like 10 or 15 games athletes and other like highly finished regional competitors that were there. So I don't know, maybe like 60 men or so. I can't remember exactly, but 60 or 70 men, but all, you know, good athletes.
Can everyone check their mics real quick and just push these in? We're getting a little buzz.
Who's buzzing?
Who's buzzing?
Oh, it's me.
That was Chris.
It's gone.
We're good now.
Okay.
See how I fixed that? So those 2 years of ITT, Technical Institute, really paid off.
What are we talking about today?
Oh, I need to talk to my microphone. Today we're going to talk about training priorities leading up to the CrossFit Games or any kind of CrossFit competition. We brought Mike on because he is the one who competes the most and does the best out of all four of us. Actually, he's the only one that signs up.
Doesn't matter. I'm still the best.
Oh my god.
What are you talking about?
Why are you looking at me like that? Move on.
I want to talk about your training leading up to the CrossFit Games. Your goal is to go to regionals, and you've been to regionals the last couple years. Mm-hmm. Your goal is to go to the games. Mm-hmm. And what's kind of led up to that? Why are you choosing? Why is this your goal now? And what was your goal previous years? And how's it all led up to this?
Obviously I've grown as an athlete over the years. You know, first time I ever competed, I didn't even make top 30 at regionals, but it just opened me up to, not doing it recreationally anymore. That, you know, if you want to be the best, you gotta take it a little bit more serious than just kind of like, oh yeah, I'm going to work out during the week. And then, but I'll still have my fun on the weekends, you know, and do whatever. So
would you say you had an honest, if not reasonable, goal of making it in previous years, but you didn't quite know just how much you'd have to put into it.
I saw that you could get there, but it was like I was just kind of doing it, you know. I'm like, it'd be awesome if
I want to go to the games.
Yeah, I want to go to the games, but like I had no idea what it really took to like
kind of the way most people would make these big commitments. Like, oh yeah, I want to lose X, I want to accomplish X.
Right, but are you really doing it next year?
The year before it'll happen, but they don't put any actionable steps into place. They don't actually understand what will get them there. Mm-hmm. I think Mike knows that now.
I'm trying.
Pretty damn well.
Yeah. I think you know enough games athletes now, and you've competed with them and trained with enough of them to say, like, to be next to them competing and, you know, standing toe-to-toe with them and beating them in a lot of cases where you're like, you know what, this is totally a possibility. Whereas before, if you haven't competed with those people and you haven't been around those people, it seems like this really far-off goal. But
oh, absolutely.
But once it's like, you know, once it's right next to you, you go, oh, wow, I'm just like the rest of these guys. I could totally do this.
Yeah, you cross a critical moment where you actually see the path to getting what you want.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have to see yourself doing it, you know, otherwise it won't happen.
You can't see yourself.
And it's getting, the field's getting so narrow. the field's getting so strong now that you're not just going to get lucky anymore.
Mm-hmm. So last year you got second, you were in second place for a long time at regionals, and then,
well, it was
and then
2 years ago, right?
Yeah. Was it 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Never mind. I remember, but you've been really close in the past and like just kind of like right on the edge and haven't quite gotten there. And I think this year, I mean, your training's been spot on, and you're by far, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but like you are like the best athlete you've ever been right now.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
Yep.
Actually, you kind of brought up something by accident, but like you competed at regionals 2 years ago, and then last year you didn't compete as an individual. You went on a team, and mm-hmm. I think it's kind of important to talk about their priorities at that point. So you didn't have the priority last year to go to the games, and you kind of took the year off. You joined the team with Faction and participated that way. And part of it was you weren't even in the country for all of the Open.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
so what went into the decision making there to go from? You went from competing and going to regionals and doing really well. You were in second place for a while. You went to seventh place by the end of it, unfortunately.
Yep.
You had a bad wad. And then the next year, you didn't take time off. I mean, you trained really, really hard. You decided it was more important to take an opportunity to go to Africa and enjoy that. Miss some of the open wads. That way it would make you ineligible
to
go to regionals. But you could still be on the team. Mm-hmm. You compete on the team. Team did really well and had a good time. And then after regionals, you know, it's like something clicked and you decided to really take the next 12 months to go to the games.
It actually started when we were there competing that weekend. I think I decided to hire a coach the week before we went to regionals. I'd started training again and getting the team ready to go to regionals and do our best. And leading up to that, I was like, you know, I miss this. Like, I miss giving it everything I have. I just want to see exactly how far I can go with everything I've got, and taking trips and whatnot, you know, wasn't fulfilling. Like, it was fun to get out of town and travel and see a little bit, but, you know, I felt incomplete. You know, I knew that I was just scratching the surface 2 years ago, and I had a lot more, so I wanted to...
What are your training priorities kind of leading up to a competition, you know, 4 months out, 3 months out, 2 months out, 1 month out for a big competition that you really want to do well at? How do you structure and restructure and tweak your training leading up to a competition?
For me personally, like, you know, starting 4 months out, much more volume, kind of like building up your base on everything, you know, whether it be like your gymnastic endurance and your motor, just working a little bit more on your motor and just growing as an athlete, not necessarily sharpening the skills yet. So you're kind of tempering the sword at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you get closer to 1 or 2 months out, then you start sharpening it.
Okay. So let's stick on that just for a second. You're working on your motor in some ambiguous terms that people could, you know, take one direction or another, but you're not working on your skills. So give some examples about what you might do versus what you might not be doing. Specific examples.
So for me specifically, now this is different from athlete to athlete. Like, so for me, I feel like I'm pretty balanced in all my skills. So there's not really anything that's going to keep me out of a competition.
Mm-hmm.
So I just need to raise it all up as far as my motor and everything else, you know, like, so I'm biggest weakness would be, you know, like an aerobic base. So 4 months out, I was doing, you know, I'm doing a lot of long distance stuff, motor training still. So a lot of, you want some specific examples you said.
Yeah.
So,
give me an example of a workout you would do to train your motor.
How do you turn your motor on? Go ahead.
About 5 days a week, I'm up and I'm doing something monostructural.
What does monostructural mean?
I'm going to be getting there when I say monostructural. A run, a row, an aerodyne, or a swim. And it's 30 to 45 minutes to an hour long every time.
Wow.
And it's always varied. You know, some mornings I get up and I just run for 45 minutes.
Not competitively, just like, yeah, not for time.
More just to kind of get up and get, you know, the breathing work in and just to... Mm-hmm. Just to get my body used to moving that kind of a distance.
So I guess a good point of perspective for most people is that this is sort of what he does as a active recovery thing.
It allows me to train more because
this is
it
not
forces
like
my body to kick everything in gear, like, and get going.
If I got up on a random morning and ran 45 minutes casually, I'd be exhausted.
Different for you.
It's different for me. Yeah. So this is your relaxation recovery mode.
This is said by a guy that jerks damn near close to 400 pounds. Like, you have a good strength base. It's okay for you to focus on your aerobic stuff because that's what you're not good at.
Exactly. Like, you know, if you were to, I always like thinking of this comparison as like, you played like football games or hockey games on like, you know, Super Nintendo or something. Mm-hmm. You go through players and you have like the different meters, right?
Yeah,
like your accuracy, agility, all this and that. The better athlete's going to have those balanced, right? Rather than the strength bar being up here and your stamina being down here, you know? Mm-hmm. So you want to balance them out. We got to think the same way as CrossFit athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a program like you would design a character on Tecmo Bowl.
And if basically.
That's interesting.
Basically.
A new way of looking at it. Yeah. That's incredible.
And, you know, sometimes you can buy it. Depends.
There's
the game.
There's some kid out there right now going, I've got it. In 5 years, he'll be the next great coach.
That's right.
No, but so.
Yeah. So that's 4 months out?
Yeah, so 4 months out.
And that's you. That's not
right.
You know, every athlete. So if you're an athlete that maybe doesn't have the same strength base that Mike has, then you may be doing something very different. If your coach is having you do something different, it's okay. It doesn't mean they're doing it wrong. This is for him only.
This is very specific, right? Yeah. So if you're more of an enduring athlete, you're probably going to be lifting a ton 4 months out, you know, and you just have like once a week or every 2 weeks, you're just going to touch on, you know, the long distance stuff, like, because you don't need to, you know. Mm-hmm. It'll come back. If that's your natural essence of an athlete, it'll come back quick.
All right. So you're working on your motor 4 months out, not so much skill work. And then what are you doing when you're not doing your morning monostructural, you know, 30-minute runs and whatnot?
You mean the PMs?
Sure. The PMs.
What do you do for your PMs?
Mike trains twice a day.
Right now, testing. I do a lot of tests in the PMs. When I say tests, I mean like CrossFit style workouts, regional style workouts that you're going to see, because I that's another weakness of mine. I need more experience. I need to learn more. I need to learn more about my body and just, you know, the randomness of it. You need to kind of,
so that's practicing,
get out there and mix it up. But it goes in phases too. They're specific type of tests per phase, you know. So
okay, so 4 months out right now, basically, what are your testers look like
right now? They're all over the place right now, to be honest. Yeah. It's hard to give an example. You know, Monday nights right now, I'm in the phase I'm in. I'm doing like a short, very heavy, powerful workout. So, you know, like a 21-15-9 of like heavy power cleans and box jumps. Mm-hmm. Something that'll put you down pretty fast.
Are you
What's
doing
a heavy power clean?
Yeah.
The 185 or something.
Okay.
You know.
For lots of reps.
Yeah, that's 45 power cleans and 45 box jumps, you know, 30-inch box jumps, just a gasser, yeah. You know. And then
you're talking about like a 5 minute wad.
Yeah, 4 to 5 minutes, you know, something heavy that'll just burn you up.
Yeah.
You know, Tuesday PMs are more kind of like gymnastic endurance, you know, more motor training. I do a high volume, low intensity session. Mm-hmm. So like it's about an hour long, but I'm accumulating like 150 chest to bar pull-ups, 100 power cleans, 100 toes to bar, you know, just a ton of work over a long period of time.
Yeah.
Kind of like starting from scratch, and we'll build on that each week, building up the base, you know.
Yeah, so you got a big amount of work you're putting in. You're doing, you said, a lot of variation. So it's also time to literally get feedback on the things you might discover that will need more focused work later on.
Like,
I'm actually not as good as this one thing as I thought I would be. So you have plenty of time now to focus and draw it up a little bit.
Yep.
Brilliant.
And then
you're smart.
Wednesday mornings I swim. But you know, I learned how to swim the past few months, so I can use swimming now. I go in the mornings and it's rather than going out and like kind of learning how to swim and active recovery, I can use it now as like another training session, because you know, I'll do swim 25 meters on the minute for 40 minutes. You know, like it's basically one-to-one work, you know, 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off,
yeah,
kind of thing.
And it won't beat you up too bad.
No, not at all. And I'm actually recovering from that, you know, but it's an extra training session a week, you know, just because I learned how to swim.
Yeah.
And then the PMs, I have like a long grinder workout, like a 15 to 20 minute, just something you would see like on a Sunday or a Saturday night. And that, to be honest, I don't ask too many questions as the athlete from my coach. I just kind of do the work. My guess is that it's just beating me up, just getting me used to training tired and sore. You know, it's my third day on, and you end the third day with a grinder.
People have to remember, you know, CrossFit's a somewhat unique sport in that the strength and conditioning portion is easy. There's like that gray area where you're practicing your skill. So like any sport, say a football player, you know, they spend their time in the gym getting bigger, stronger, faster, you know, working with their Olympic lifts and squatting and stuff like that. But then they also practice their skill on the field, and, you know, and that's practice. So with CrossFit, there's definitely times where you're, you know, doing some intervals or you're doing some weight training that doesn't mimic what you're going to see at a CrossFit competition. But that's your strength and conditioning.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that 15-minute wad on the weekend that looks a lot like what you might see at a competition, that's your practice.
Yeah, like, you know, football coaches say, you know, we're going live today. You know, that's that Wednesday night is going live. And you're, that's the test. Is, you know, you're tired and beat up, and you just got to learn from that. It can't be so structured because it's CrossFit. You never know what they're going to have next year. It could, you know, we think right now it's two workouts a day for 3 days. Who knows what they're going to do this year at regionals? It could change.
And part of the practice is recovery as well. Practicing Absolutely. To recover, doing multiple wads on a Saturday, mimicking what's going to happen in competition. What are some things you do for your to prep for that recovery? Do you try to like do exactly what you're going to do on competition day?
Well, that goes back to being specific per athlete. We'll see, but I don't really feel like a weakness of mine is recovery during weekends. I feel like I hold up pretty good against the volume. So I only have basically one session on Saturdays right now. I have a pretty tough Friday night and a fairly easy Saturday. Maybe 2-3 weeks out of the competition, I'll bump up the volume, but I feel like my body's built up to that now. I've been doing this for 3 or 4 years. Plus I had a pretty big background before this in other sports. So, the volume isn't something that I necessarily need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like specific per workout. Yeah. But not necessarily like three or four in a day. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't ever really feel like I have a problem like bonking in a workout because I'm just not used to the volume. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I totally bonked that one, Coach. It's okay. 10% of all your lifts will be bonked.
This past year, it was about a year ago this time, you decided to hire a coach and get in all that. And you were a really strong guy already. I mean, you already had really great numbers on the Olympic lifts. On your squats looked good. You could pull a lot of weight. But your endurance side of things weren't as great. Like, how has your strength been the last year? Have you gotten stronger the last 12 months? Has there been a lot of focus on it? How's the training looked?
There's not been much focus at all, and it has not really fallen off that much. And I feel confident that when we get closer, we're going to introduce it back into the training, and it's all going to bump right back up. But when I hired the coach, it was because I was trying to do it myself, and I just kept kind of going back, favoring my strengths just a little bit, and you don't really realize it till you kind of step back and look at it that you're doing it, you know, because egotistically too, you don't want to let that go. Like, that feels good. That's what kind of athlete you are. You want to do that, you know? So hiring a coach was great because he can prioritize and let you know what's
he
you know,
sees
important
what you can't
to work
see.
On. Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough to be objective with yourself.
Yeah.
Pretty much impossible.
So how do you switch up your training? We talked about 4 months out. What kind of adjustments do you make leading up to competition? You know, 2 months out, 1 month out, 1 month out, excuse me. And then 1 month out. And then, you know, even 2 weeks out, 1 week out. How do you taper and how do you peak for a competition?
You know, you can do it very slowly. So 4 months out, I'll give you an example. You know, let's say training sessions per week, I'm at like 10, right? So 3 months out, We may bump that up to 11, but it doesn't necessarily have to be like a high intensity day that you bump up to it. You're just getting used to getting up and moving for another session. Who cares if it's just a 30 minute row, but you're still getting up. Then another week, you switch that row to maybe some intervals, you know, so it's a little bit higher intensity. You didn't really add another training session, but the volume, you know, there's a little bit more work there. Then the next week, you might change that to a test, you know. So something a little bit more high intense, rather than just dumping it in all at once. A lot of people tend to do that. You know, they're only training 5 days a week, five sessions a week, and then a month out, they double it, you know. And, like, that is really hard on your body. Yeah. And most people get to competition, and they're like, oh, my God, I'm just beat up. Well, yeah, because you doubled your training, you know, in a matter of, like, 1 or 2 weeks.
It's called progression.
Yeah, so
it takes time.
Slow progression. And a lot of people, too, have the problem with, like, have a long-term plan, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't start training for regionals 2 months out. You know, start a year ahead. You know, you got to decide, like, what your actual goal is.
So all the adaptations and accommodations take a lot of time. You can't do something for, like, 3 weeks ago. Oh, this shit's just not working.
Well, yeah,
it takes time to reconfigure your body.
People used to be able to prep for regionals a few months out and get away with it. Not everybody, but some people could. That's just not possible.
You're not getting the level fit. Of talent, you're not getting more fit in 3 weeks.
Not what it is now. There's just too much talent, too many people gunning for this thing. You need time to get your business sorted.
So you're suggesting that as you add training volume, add in another session at a lower intensity, maybe kind of like you're saying earlier, maybe a 30-minute easy row.
Sure.
Just adding in some volume. And then from there, you can add in the next week, make it a little harder. Do 10 sets, minute on, minute off of hard intervals.
Yep.
And then maybe the next week, then you can do like a serious, you know, 10-minute AMRAP tester of you know, some harder movements. And you're easing into that volume.
And be patient with it. You know, like a lot of people think, you know, if you have a four-week program and you're going to add each week, I'll give you an example. Row 500 meters, eight sets at a minute 40 pace the first week. Mm-hmm. And your goal is to get down to the next week doing minute 39, then a minute 38, then a minute 37. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that first week, they're like, man, the minute 40 was easy. You know, I'm gonna do a few more, you know. It's okay for that week. Be patient because the next week it's going to be harder, and the next week it's going to get harder, and it'll get even harder. Mm-hmm. So you got to be patient and realize that the first couple weeks might be okay. Not all 4 weeks are intended to be, you know, weeks to kill yourself.
I think that's the most critical thing people can learn. It seems so simple.
And that translates to all matters of your training.
Yeah, same thing. I was thinking, same thing goes for lifting. If you're going to do like, oh, I'm going to start, I want to get strong, so I'm going to do 5 sets of 5 on a squat. In week one, you may pick, oh, let me think, 200 pounds seems like it might be really tough. But you do it. Let's say it was actually a lot easier than you thought. The first thing that pops your mind is like, well, I should just go back and do some more because this wasn't hard for me.
Right.
You have week 2 and week 3 to build up, to kind of build into this sort of accumulation of work and hit this peak.
A small peak.
Hit this peak rewarding moment. We're actually pretty close to having a really, really tough workout. And then you have some time to recover. And then you start again. So over 3 or 4 of those, you hit sort of really what you should be doing. And it's okay that takes time.
I think also it has a lot to do with the experience of the athlete. If you're not very experienced, then for me personally, when I'm coaching somebody, if they're not very experienced in lifting, they, you know, less than 2 years of squat volume under their belt, it might be good for them to be more aggressive on that, you know. But if you've been training for a long time, yeah, being conservative and planning it out and making sure you stick to the program is more important, because a lot of times people that aren't as experienced can make really, really fast gains.
And and having a coach will help because they can see that better than you can on a mat. Like, well, I remember doing mine, my own programming, and, you know, I wanted to get better at pull-ups, so I was programming. I was just doing a ton of pull-ups each week with no progression, but just high volume for 4 weeks, and I jacked up my shoulders, you know. I wasn't patient enough to have an easy week and then a harder week and a little bit harder and a little bit harder. Mm-hmm. You know, I just had no idea of, like, how to
peak
for something.
Comes back to that idea, Doug. You don't get better from doing work. You get better from recovering from doing the work.
Yeah.
Boom! Boom, boom, boom! Pearls and nuggets!
And with that, we will take a break. Yeah. When we return, we will talk about how to set realistic goals and peaking for competition.
Hey, guys. This is Rich Froning, and you're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to fitter.tv.
You ready? Yeah. All right. We're back.
We're back.
First, I want to mention Mike McGoldrick is actually offering some remote coaching. So if some of this stuff really interests you and what he's saying, what we're talking about, that's available on the Barbell Shrug shop. So if you go to barbellshrug.com and click on the shop, there are not only seminars that you can purchase that we've made, but also some remote coaching. If you click on the coaching, you can see where Mike McGoldrick is now available to be your coach. When you click on his stuff, it'll kind of – his stuff. When you click – yeah, you can click on his stuff if you want.
Yeah.
It'll still take you there.
Nothing's going
to
happen.
It'll get you where you need to go.
You'll kind of see a breakdown of what all you'll get with the remote coaching. So we've got little bullet points there. You can see Mike's stats. So he's not the only one. Matt Baird is on there as well. So we've got these two guys coaching, and they do an excellent job. Very happy.
Thank you, Mike.
High quality. Yeah. High quality.
Yeah. Other thing is, we've got T-shirts to buy, as you probably already know. And we're still counting them as pre-order. We have shipped some out, but we're still counting them as pre-order just because the inventory is going so fast. And we're not really good at this inventory thing, so we're still figuring it out. Once we get it figured out, then you'll be able to buy them and get them like 3 days later. But please bear with us. We're also now shipping to Australia. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, Jason?
Perfect.
Perfect. All right. So before we took a break, you were talking a little bit about volume and progression and leading up to competition and peaking.
Right.
How do you do that?
Going back to one of the earlier points, we talked about slowly adding training sessions in to increase your volume. Mm-hmm. You know, to avoid dumping you know, too many intense workouts all at once. So you, you know, start with maybe adding just a long session, just, you know, into your, in, or short lifting session, whatever kind of athlete you are trying to work on it. And the reason why is like, because for every session you add to your week, that's going to take more time out of your day. It's going to require more sleep. It's going to require more meals prepped, and you need to prepare for that rather than, dumping them all in at once. And then you're like, I don't even know where to start trying to recover for all this. And you're overtrained. So doing it slowly like that will help you, outside of your training as well.
So what you're saying is don't go from 5 training sessions a week to 10 training sessions a week in 1 month.
If you've never done it before. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You want to go, all right, this week I'm doing 5, next week 6.
Yep.
Maybe I do 6 training sessions for 3 weeks. And then the next 3 weeks, I'll throw in
because,
7.
Yeah, you have to learn to recover from that. Not mm-hmm. just, you know, your body, but just getting everything else in line in your life to mm-hmm. to work around all of it. Because it's basically adding another job to your life, you know.
For sure. Your muscles are always going to recover faster than your tendons and your ligaments and your joints. So you want to add that volume slowly. That way, even if your muscles feel fine, you don't start to get achy shoulders, achy
yes,
knees.
Yes, exactly.
Lord, you got to ease into that.
Story of my life for the last 2 years of training. Being too awesome. No, but that's the greatest point ever. Like I struggle with that every week and feeling that I could do so much more. Mm-hmm. But the one little ligament, the one joint in my wrist, this, that, and the other is where it's sort of like the great indicator that now you're doing a little too much.
Yeah, that definitely comes with age as well.
You have to sort of yield to that, defer to that reality.
Yep, that comes with training age. A lot of people, you know, 1 year... If you've never had the volume leading up and you want to compete in regional level and you just start throwing that volume in, yeah, you don't have the joints and tendons to handle that volume yet. That takes some time. And although you may be able to, your muscles are recovering, like you said, mm-hmm. you know, you gotta slowly add and, you know, account for those things.
Takes time.
Yep.
Takes time. It takes patience.
So after you peak with your volume, you have, you know, a period of time where you do a little bit of less volume, maybe like the week out,
mm-hmm.
where you can be recovered, rested, and ready for the competition. Where mm-hmm. you're not sore, you're not beat up, like kind of like we just talked about. Your joints are feeling good, and when you show up for game day, so to speak, you're ready and you're fresh.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do that week out to limit your training volume, but still be doing something make it where you're totally 100% recovered and ready for competition.
Yeah, so 2 to 3 weeks out, the volume's really high, the intensity is very high. You're feeling pretty rough, but mm-hmm. you're performing great, right? The next week or 2 weeks, you start to back it down. So the 2 weeks out, you may not necessarily drop off training,
mm-hmm.
Training sessions, but you may decrease the volume in those training sessions.
Per session, yeah.
Right. So and then the last week out, you know, the priority is just to stay healthy that week. Mm-hmm. Stay healthy and stay sharp and alert and focused.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, for example, mm-hmm. you know, let's say I compete on Friday, mm-hmm. I would train Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe have a double on Tuesday, maybe one, you know, train once on Wednesday, rest Thursday, mm-hmm. and then, you know, train once on that Monday. Stuff that's, you know, will keep your nervous system alert, you know, some power cleans,
mm-hmm.
Row sprints, nothing that'll beat you up necessarily. Mm-hmm. A couple of 400 meter runs, you know, just one or two,
mm-hmm.
And maybe one test that week. Short but powerful,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, a 2K row or something high skill is very fast. A workout like Amanda, you know. So if it's not going to beat you up, something that gives you confidence, that you know you're going to do good at, and then it will prep you for that weekend. You don't want to do anything that's going to crush your spirits that week.
No.
All right. Yeah. You want to do stuff you know you're good at, build up that confidence, you know, and then that way you're ready to kick ass on Friday.
Mm-hmm. You know, you reduce your volume, increase the intensity.
Exactly.
And
that's a really pretty awesome approach. I did the same thing in later years with training, but I made one key switch where I moved that last easy week up a week. And then made the week before the competition, that prep week, kind of a little bit of a ramp back up. Mm-hmm. So I was well rested, all pain going away. But that last week, I kind of turned the engine back on a little bit just to sort of build momentum. And I go in way more confident, actually.
Yeah.
That's one key thing I learned maybe a little bit too late. It's like I like going in knowing, primed, having one or two actual real sessions back under my belt, knowing that the adaptation is there, then being ready to hit it.
Yeah. And I mean, as CrossFitters, like, we recover fast. Like we're used to handling a lot of volume. So I don't really believe in shutting the week down. You know, no. Like a lot of people take a full week off. Like, no,
that's probably too much.
You just went from training 15 times a week to taking a full week off. You're going to feel sick. You know, like, so you're still going to work. You're still going to work a week out.
Good powerlifting coaches always teach me that. Smarter. Saying that, look, you want to rest, but then again, you're doing all this stuff because it's making you a good lifter. So sitting on your ass for a week
and eating those things.
You need to keep doing those things to stay good. That's about as simple as you can state it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sitting on your butt doing nothing, thinking you're recovering is probably a little too much. I mean, you need to be loose and stay focused. You need to be doing some few things with a barbell just so you can keep sort of primed.
So, Mike, how do you suggest people be more objective about their weaknesses? We were talking about weaknesses and strengths earlier. What are some things people can do to identify that?
You can try and guess all day long, and you can try and predict what's going to be at regionals. The best way to find out your weaknesses is to go compete. Just get out there, and whether it's good programming or bad programming at the competition, if you suck at something, it's obviously a weakness, you know? So get out and compete more. It's great practice. You just learn a lot about yourself because you can try and mock those situations in the gym all day long, but nothing is ever the same as actually getting out and having a judge next to you in front of people. You know, the cortisol levels are different. Everything's different. You're stressed. You can't mock that in the gym. It's really difficult.
Like,
so
you may be really terrible at double unders. Maybe you know that. Mm-hmm. And maybe you put time into your training to practice that extra. Maybe you have improved. But until you get out in the meet where you're being rushed through a line to do it in front of spectators under, you know, a schedule that's not ideal for you, then you really know if you've got better. You know, doing it on your own when you're comfortable in your garage is not going to be a test.
Training is a skill and strength is a skill. Competing is a skill.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
Big flasher buzzwords.
That's right.
Pay attention to this point right here. Bing, bing.
Yeah. And you're prepping your meals and knowing what to eat and how long before the workout to get some food in you and kind of what you can tolerate when you're nervous, you know, what you can eat when you're nervous and you know, you kind of freaked out about the next event or whatever.
Yep.
You know, a lot of people can't eat normal on competition day. They just don't. They're not hungry.
Yeah. And you got to know that. Like, and how would you know that if you've never competed?
You're the only person who can answer those questions.
And if you can't find a competition, set up your own mock competition and do everything that day that you would do at competition. The food, like everything. You got to know exactly what you want to put in your body that day. You know, you don't want to take chances. You don't want to guess. You don't want to eat things that your body's not used to
using. Coach Chris give you some advice before you have this. What's the toughest workout you could see pop up at a competition? What would make you really scared?
For me at regionals?
Yeah, for you personally.
Oh, I mean, I know they're going to be there. The long workout number four on Saturday night. With 150
long
pull-ups.
You know you got to do long workout number four. God damn it, long workout number four. Oh, my God. I'm going to be sick to my stomach. I want to be recovered and well nourished for this. I'll eat a large French dip sandwich with extra roast beef. That would be a mistake. And you would only know that unless you had tried to eat the long French dip sandwich with extra roast beef and you figured, wow, this is just a terrible, terrible decision. But now you know. And there could be this guy out there who's like, the key to him focusing and relaxing was eating that French dip sandwich before he went and did long workout number four.
You got to discover that.
You got to discover this for yourself. No one can guide you.
Yeah. So yeah, self-discovery is huge. You got to compete.
Encourage the experimentation.
Experiment.
What do you do kind of in between competitions? You can only compete so many times per year, especially depending on where you live and if you're a part of a big gym or whatever. You know, if you don't know what you're good at, you don't know what you're bad at, you don't know that much about programming necessarily, like, you know, who do you talk to? Do you talk to training partners? What if you don't have a coach at all? Like, how do you find out what your strengths and weaknesses are? What if you train in your garage?
We skipped, you know, asking a coach. So if you don't have anyone to ask or to bounce off ideas from, you're screwed. No, I'm just kidding.
There's no hope for you.
That's right.
You've got to test yourself. You've got to be creative. You know, you got to keep changing it and find stuff that is going to challenge you. I mean, you know, you're pretty much on your own at that point. And I believe everyone needs a coach if you're trying to be the best you can be for yourself, but not everyone has the funds or the ability to do that.
I guess you could use video to sort of see what you can't see, tape everything you do. I guess you can put that online so people can comment.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, the community is so tight-knit that everyone's willing to help. Like, you know, be that guy who's posting your videos, you know, everyone take a look. Let me know what you think.
I mean, you'll get some good comments
for sure. And watch yourself over and over and over and just, you know, critique yourself.
10 people make comment, two of those people are going to make fun of you for doing what you're doing because they have no courage or desire to do anything on their own.
Who cares?
Like, but you're going to get like four or five really awesome comments. So you can get into the community. You can get feedback that way, I think.
Yep.
And then I say also make things as objective as possible. If you're going to write out a plan for some test, you got to hold yourself to some strict guidelines, or else whatever you get out of that experience is going to be sort of tainted.
Yep.
So like, if you're going to test yourself, test it and take a cold, hard look of how long it took you to complete that. Videotape yourself, see what your form is. Like, stick to those sort of guidelines.
Yeah, have some integrity when you're training. You know,
don't
take reps
ego.
Away from yourself. You know, and having a video camera is great when you're on your own because it keeps you honest. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're held liable for posting those videos, you're not going to cheat reps. You're not going to, you know, not that you intentionally do it, but when you're tired, you know, it's easy to say, "Oh, my chest didn't hit the bar." I'll just keep going, though, you know.
Because you know you're going to show this to people. You're going to try to do a better job.
You have that video. You're held accountable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can just interview your friends. You know, just go to your friends and say, "Hey, like, I need some honest feedback. I want to go to this competition. You know, what do you think I'm best at? What am I not good at? Mm-hmm. Like, really tell me. I really want to know. And, like, I'm not going to, like, get mad at you. You know, that type of thing. Most of your friends, you know, you're probably not going to get mad at them. But, you know, get some real, like, critical feedback in a friendly way from the people that know and care about you and want you to succeed. And if you have a good group around you, you'll probably get some good nuggets and pearls, as we always
say. Absolutely.
And go into it ready to be told that, this thing you think you're good at, you actually kind of suck at. Because everybody has those things. Like, oh, I don't have a problem with that. Actually, it's not really good at that.
Yeah. The key there is just say, okay, what else? Don't go, well,
No, actually, I was going to say, fuck you.
Be coachable. Yeah. Well, allow yourself to be coached.
Don't get
once
an ego,
you disagree,
everybody has something that is a big weakness. Even, I guess even you could say Froning's got some weaknesses, things that he could actually work on and improve. Yeah. Everybody can hear it, and it's okay.
No.
He's the one guy.
He might, but you can't even see him with a freaking telescope.
Yeah, once you offer some resistance in a situation like that, immediately your friends are like, oh, shit. Like, he doesn't really want my feedback. He
wants a pat on
some attention.
Yeah, he wants some attention. Yeah, they won't give you real feedback, but they'll just try to make you feel good at that point. They don't want to hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
So don't give any resistance. Just say, oh, that's awesome. What else? And just keep asking what else, what else, what else, and just take
all
the feedback and don't even contribute to the conversation other than saying, oh, that's pretty good. What else? What else?
Yeah.
And just keep it flowing by saying what else, what else, what else.
Super receptive.
I've heard that a ton of times. People ask for help and then they have an excuse for why they're asking for help.
Yeah.
You know, or for the example you give them, and you're like, just listen, please.
Ask
for the help, just take it.
I just stop giving people advice at that point. Like, what do you think? And I tell them, like, well, and they start resisting a little bit. I'm like, oh, okay, well, now I'm just going to try to get out of this conversation as quick as possible. Screw you.
Yeah.
But when you went from, you were programming for yourself. Mm-hmm. When you went from programming for yourself, you went from programming yourself to following a blog.
Correct.
To hiring a coach.
Yep.
What changed when you did those things?
When I programmed for myself, I was always scared that I wasn't doing enough, and I was never confident in my training. I always felt like I was leaving something out. I just never felt like I had the right program. And, you know, is this too much? Is this too little? I just had no confidence in it. When I went to a blog, if I started following a blog, it was nice because I was like, good, I can just get up and do this and
relax.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I'll just do the work. And as an athlete, I really think you should just do the work. You shouldn't be worried about, you know, the stress of, are you doing enough? Just do the work.
Well, then having to sit down and think of everything you need to do takes a lot of resource and time.
Right.
Be a doer, not a thinker.
Right.
Dan John has a good article.
What are you trying to do? Are you trying to learn more about the sport of fitness? Or are you trying to be the best in the sport of fitness? You know, it's two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So following the blog was great because you could just sit back and do the work. But then I slowly started to realize that, you know, this may not still be answering all the questions. I still have a lot of gaps to fill in, and it's not for me. You know, if I'm following a blog and it's telling me to train 3 days on 3 times a day on Wednesday, I'm like, I have a full-time job. I can't do that. You know, but I'm still trying to make it work. Like, that doesn't make sense, right? It's got to be worked. I truly believe in individualized programming if you're trying to be optimal for, you know, at your ability and who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. So then I hired a coach.
Better human being.
Yeah. And
leave humanity behind.
hiring a coach, they work around your lifestyle. You know, that it's catered to you specifically, and you don't, it's much more efficient. You don't waste any time. You know,
it's a really good point. If somebody says you should do this, eat this, train at this time, but it's so obviously not when it's possible for you to do any of those things. You need
stop
a different approach.
Don't
fight the direction your life is going and the shape it's taking. You have to work with that.
And if you can't get a coach, be creative with it and mold it yourself. You know, follow a week behind so that way you can plan ahead and see what's going to come up.
That's really good advice.
You know, yeah. Like, I know you want to get on and post your scores with all those people. You know, it's important for you to see your numbers up against everyone else's, whatever. But follow a week behind, you know, and set up your schedule that way, you know.
Were there big swings in the type of how your training volume and the type of training you were doing when you hired the remote coach?
Yeah.
Like, the coach was like, was it drastically different than what you had been doing?
Yeah.
To fulfill fill those weaknesses?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't lift near as much as I was. I was lifting 2 or 3 times a week, which is I didn't need to. Like, you still need to be strong, but that's not my weakness. My weakness is longer stuff. So I do a lot of that. I don't do as many, like, lactic endurance intervals. A lot of, like, you know, minute-long to 90-second work, 5 to 10-minute rest stuff. I was doing that, like, a bunch. I was doing a lot more interval training. I test a lot more now. I do a lot of long-distance stuff. And I lift once or twice a week, if that. So way different than what I was used to.
Yeah, it's radically different.
And it's fun. I love it.
Yeah. I think when you first started doing the longer stuff, you were like, oh, gee, a little overwhelming. And then now it's like you're a different athlete.
Absolutely. I crave this stuff now. You know, I definitely feel like I've changed as an athlete. Before, I used to love lifting. It's all I wanted to do. And even when something long came up, I was miserable. I went into it with a mindset of just like, this sucks. But if you want to change as an athlete, you have to get past that and know that you're going to do well at that stuff.
Everybody say goodbye to Doug.
I got somewhere to be. Bye,
right,
Short Nation.
Adios.
Peace out, homie. We want to talk a little bit about setting goals and talk about the difference between, say, outcome goals and behavior goals. And, you know, setting a goal, like I want to go to regionals in 2014, you know, that is a goal that
it's nice.
Some people should set. I mean, I don't think it's a goal that someone shouldn't set.
And good for you for setting it.
But you realistically have no control over that whatsoever. You know, some things could happen to you that are out of your control that could keep you from competing at your best at that time. But also, there's, you know, billions of other people in the world that could, you know, outperform you. So when you're setting these goals, maybe
don't set yourself up for failure.
Maybe think about behavior goals.
Yeah.
In order to achieve those,
it's always really
outcome
easy.
Goals.
It's always really easy to set that big goal that makes you feel really excited and awesome for the 5 minutes after you say, "Yeah, I'm gonna go and make the CrossFit Games next year." Good for you, but there's nothing in that. There's nothing to wrap milestones around. There's nothing to hold you accountable. There's nothing to change your behavior. The actual things that are gonna be the steps along the path to actually making that a possibility. Like, you know, like I said, McGoldrick may have felt that way 2 years ago. Like, this is the year I do this. Great. But until you've been close enough to see what the steps actually need to be, until you have the knowledge experience to actually understand what's gonna need to be done to get to the CrossFit Games, to lose 50 pounds, to do X strength feat, whatever, you're just not going to be able to do it. And it's no fault to you.
Yeah.
It's just that you just don't know what the fuck you're talking about for right now. That's fine.
I want to kind of spell it out, too. You know, the difference between an outcome goal and a behavior goal. An outcome goal is, you know, I want to lose 10 pounds. You know, that's an outcome goal, is the weight has been lost. But the behavior goal would be, you know, I'm going to stay 100% paleo 6 days a week, and I'm going to be in the gym 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Those are behavior goals. Those are things you can control. Those are things you can do. And then if you're doing those things, then the outcome goal is kind of a byproduct of that. And so, you know, that's why I say if your goal is to go to regionals in 2014, that may be, you know, that's something you don't have a lot of control over. But what you do have control over is, okay, I'm going to eat clean. I'm going to recover well. I'm going to stay on the training program that my coach has set for me. All those things. Those are behavior goals to set. And so what are some behavior goals you've set that help you? I mean, you obviously have outcome-based goals.
Sure.
And this year, what's your outcome-based goal?
My outcome-based goal is I want to make the CrossFit Games. So how am I going to do that?
Top 3 in your region.
Yeah, I want to make top 3 in the region. So
Yeah, what are some behavior goals you've kind of set to make that happen?
No more excuses on, you know, what I feel like I can also do outside of it. You know, like, oh, well, you know, I worked hard this week. I can go, you know, have a few beers this weekend, you know, that kind of stuff. Or, you know, I worked pretty tough. You know, I can take a week off in training. Like, I mean, you gotta, all right, so starting simply, you gotta figure out how am I gonna measure my progress or success. You know, am I gonna measure it based off of how I finished in regionals, or am I gonna measure it based off how much I improved as a person? Because you set yourself up for failure, I think, if you measure it based off of how you finished in regionals.
That's out of your control.
It's out of your control because there's more people competing each year. They may change the test. So what you thought was your weakness last year, something random shit can come out again this year.
Hitting something with a sledgehammer.
Totally blindsided you. Yeah. And then, if you do terrible at it, but you're just flat out a better athlete and you know it, like, are you going to be disappointed?
You can't be.
I mean, it's going to suck, but you had no control over that. So you got to decide how you're going to measure that progress.
Must achieve Zen.
Yep.
As an athlete. Mm-hmm. Be at peace.
That's a good point. If you can't be happy and know you made progress, and if you're going to measure yourself just about what happened in some stupid competition that was, 100% out of your control, then you're really not going to get the reward out of all this. I mean, the reward is in the day-to-day, the little signs of progress, the little short-term behavioral changes you make that end up changing the rest of your life from there on out. You got to keep focused on what really matters.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agreed.
All right, I guess it's about that time to wrap things up. Yep. Does anyone have anything that they want to last-minute words? All right, let's plug stuff.
Cool.
I'll let Chris Moore go first today.
Yeah, so we're going to do the talk next weekend, Garage Games 1. Be there. Come out. Show your love. Be ready to learn lots of cool stuff. Bring a notepad. Bring two mechanical pencils, number two, with you to take notes on. You'll love it. Go to the chrismooreblog.com. Cool stuff. That's all I got, man.
McG.
Back to the topic of behavioral modifications. If you're looking for an extra way to help increase your recovery or improve your movement and mobility, check out mobilitykits.com. It's an all-inclusive kit. It's a self-massage and maintenance kit. It's a roller. It comes with a massage stick, a couple set of lacrosse balls.
Comes with balls.
and a stretch band, and as well as a...
Shouldn't you start advertising with that hashtag? I'm giving it to you. Use your balls.
Use your balls.
Hashtag.
It's on the list.
Okay. I'm sure you have something better in mind, actually.
His social media expert will be on that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Brandy.
AKA the girlfriend.
And it also comes with a poster with demonstrations on how to use all this stuff.
Which looks fantastic.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yep.
So there's nothing else you want to talk about? Maybe the fact that you're offering remote coaching now?
Offering remote coaching. So whether you're a CrossFit athlete or someone who's just trying to increase your fitness and improve your fitness and longevity and lifestyle, I offer remote coaching. I want to help you to determine what your goals are, set them, and I want to help you achieve them.
Sounds excellent. Pretty impressive. That sounds like a good product.
That's right.
And if I hire your services, can I expect to see sex lines in 8-12 weeks?
Sex lines.
In my abdomen?
The abs.
Oh, the F me lines?
F me lines.
Is that what they're called?
Yeah. Yeah. Can you give me those?
Remember, let's go back to setting reasonable goals.
Oh, shit.
I'm here to be honest with you.
Burn.
I didn't hire you to break my heart.
Oh, all right. Yeah, that's good, too, to have a coach that is realistic, yeah. Help you set realistic goals. Make sure to go to barbellstrug.com, check out the shop, and CTP is trying to give me hand signals to tell me what to say next, which is going to totally throw me off because my brain doesn't work that well. Yeah, now I'm totally off. Go to barbellstrug.com, check out the seminars in the shop. Just click on shop and see the seminars. Go to the online coaching, see what's available. Myself, McGoldrick, Matt Baird, we all offer our coaching services. So if you're interested in that, drop us a line or just purchase it, and we'll get the ball rolling on that. And I think that's about it. Well, yeah, make sure to go to iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating if you like this podcast. Say something nice. Build our egos up. We need it because we have...
Our egos aren't big enough.
We have nothing else.
We have
This is all we have. Oh, God.
All right. See you guys next time.
Yep.